Hello, everyone. Welcome to TechNet Radio and today's discussion for IT professionals. This is part two of a series of interviews entitled Modernizing Your Infrastructure with Hybrid Cloud. Now, in this episode, we're going to focus on planning a hybrid cloud storage architecture. Hi, my name is Kevin Remde, and I'm a senior technology evangelist on the U.S. Developer Experience team at Microsoft, coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm your humble TechNet Radio host today. Now, if you have questions or just want to stay in touch, you can reach me at my blog, aka.ms/fullofit, and you can reach me on Twitter as Kevin Remde, one word. And today I'm talking with Dan Stoltz. Dan is a chief technology strategist with Microsoft based on the East Coast. Dan is also known as IT Pro Guru and is very knowledgeable on today's topic. Now, you can reach him on his blog, itproguru.com. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. I'm also available on Twitter at IT Pro Guru. So thanks.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah. Thanks for joining us today, all of you as well. Now, I know many new startups are building everything in Azure, so they don't need to have any real hybrid concerns of how to deal with the existing infrastructure. But most companies are already established, and they have systems that might need upgrading. You know, they're on server 2003, and of course, that's going to be at end of support in less than a year from now. So if they have storage that's supported by Windows Server 2003, they're definitely going to need to consider leveraging newer technologies. And for storage solutions that might even leverage storage in the cloud, in Microsoft Azure. So let's focus on helping our viewers understand what they need to know about the state of the art in local, hybrid, and cloud storage. I'm going to start just briefly talking a little bit about on-premises storage, because again, we have these needs and many people still want to maintain storage locally. So what is, if you could maybe give us a quick summary of some of the capabilities in the existing infrastructure that you can maintain on-premises with Windows Server 2012 R2.
Sure, love to, Kevin. From a modern infrastructure standpoint, so much has changed in the last few years. There's been really quantum leaps in storage, in our infrastructure with just core Windows, Windows Server 2012 R2. The biggest of which, in my view, is actually not even a storage feature. It's a networking feature. It's the SMB protocol, which was upgraded to version 3. And SMB 3 gives us the capability of running super, super fast workloads like storage off of the network. So you can do things like have shares that are hosting your SQL databases and your Hyper-V VMs, your actual storage of those. So, you know, in the past, in order to use, in order to go across the network for storage, you had to use technologies like iSCSI or others, and they just weren't that fast. You know, you had a clear performance degradation whenever you did that over local storage. And now with SMB3, all of that's changed. It's a whole new world. And because of that, Microsoft has made some very, very, very significant changes to the storage stack on servers. Now, this is beneficial in our physical world, on a host, on a physical computer, but it's also available in a networked in a virtualized environment on a virtual machine. So there's this new technology called storage spaces. Storage spaces gives you the capability of what they basically do, Kevin, is they're virtualizing the storage infrastructure. So they're putting a layer of virtualization in there, and that gives us an enormous capabilities. You know, in the past, whenever you add a disk to a server, you go in, you partition the disk, you activate it, you partition it, you create your volumes, but the problem with that is you're limited to the storage capacity of the disk. So when you create a volume, if you're on a 2 terabyte disk, you're limited to a 2 terabyte volume. Because you have that virtualization layer in there that is storage spaces, you can now do thin provisioning. So thin provisioning gives you the capability on that same 2 terabyte drive, you can actually create a 10 terabyte partition or even multiples of those. So some pretty incredible technologies. In addition to that, because it's virtualized, again, you have other capabilities like deduplication. Deduplication gives you the capability of storing only deltas of data. So if you have a PowerPoint presentation or even a VHD that's in an archive that's different, any file that's changed, it can store just the deltas of those files. So if you've got 10 copies of a PowerPoint presentation, the only thing that's changed is the header slide with the company's name on that you're going to present to. It's only going to store that file one time, and then it's going to store the deltas for the other 9 copies. So very, very, very significant improvements in storage capacity, which greatly, of course, decreases the cost of storage in our on-premises environment. Now, some other things that SMB3 has given us is things like Hyper-V over SMB3. And I had mentioned a moment ago that you can actually run virtual hard drives on another server. Literally, that's what Hyper-V over SMB3 is, where you have your Hyper-V server, and your Hyper-V server doesn't even need to have the local storage for any of the VHDs. Those could be on a file server somewhere. It is literally that fast. And so that's been an incredible capability. And if you think about what that means is we're no longer tied to having storage on the local machine. So storage, it doesn't matter where the storage is. You're just pointing to it wherever it is. Now, a lot of this technology was actually developed for Windows Azure in the cloud platform. They needed this capability. And what we're really doing is we're taking all of that great, awesome technology and put it into the data center with Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2. It was improved even more. Some of the other things you can do is like live migration without bringing a server down. You know, the physical storage could be on one server and you want to move it to another server. Move it to your heart's content. You know, as long as you have SMB3 on both sides, you can move it without bringing it down. Users will never see. You know, they could be RDP to it. They get files open on it. None of that matters. It is just that fast. Some other technologies that this virtualization layer gives us and some other technologies built into the storage stack is storage tiering for storage spaces. So you can do things like have storage and have the operating system automatically move data from like spinning disks to SSD disks, super fast disks, based on how hot it is or how active that storage is. You know, most storage, whenever we whenever we create a file, it's never really used again, or it's used for a few days and then, you know, it's archived and never really used again, or are not used very frequently. Mm-hmm. Now, and you know, the problem is whenever we go out and buy storage in our data center, we're buying, you know, SAS disks, we're buying 10,000 RPM or 15,000 RPM disks, super, super expensive. And the reality is it's a waste of hardware. So we have things like storage tiering where you can actually put some SATA disks in there and automatically move that stuff off into SATA. You could put super fast disks like SSDs in there. You know, SSDs are so fast, orders of magnitude faster. I mean, we're not talking about a 10x improvement here, Kevin. We're talking about like 40,000x improvement in the performance of an SSD. So it's just massively different. It's not quite as fast as internal memory, which is even faster than SSD, but it is very, very, very fast. And storage tiering gives Windows the capability, or the administrator the capability, of automatically moving stuff that needs to run on fast disk to that fast disk. And then, of course, if you have documents and stuff or files that you want to pin to that fast disk so that it's always there, you can do that as well. So some really awesome technologies built into the new Windows Server product.
Yeah, it sounds to me like, you know, if I could summarize what you said there about Server 2012 R2, we've taken a lot of the capabilities of what you would ordinarily have to buy a really high-end SAN for, right, real high-end disk system, and actually added that as a function in the operating system as well. So if you want to go with a less expensive but still fully functional high-end storage solution, Windows Server can actually support that with cheap disks and spinning disks and solid-state drives for fast performance and the clustering of file systems that never go down. These are all capabilities that, you know, we would have spent lots and lots of money to do in the past. So a really good and really compelling reason to move to Server 2012 R2, you know, if not only for the fact that Server 2003 is leaving support in less than a year.
For sure. And, you know, one other thing, and even if you do have those high-end storage systems, you know, and a lot of people are finding every couple of years they have to upgrade those systems, and they're not cheap. I mean, companies are paying, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars for these high-end SAN systems. And if you have those, Windows Server 2012 R2 can leverage those technologies as well, so they can just be another storage mechanism for them. And whenever you get to the point where you're moving loads, so, you know, I don't know if you've ever gone through an upgrade of a SAN or a migration of a SAN from a small box to a much bigger box. Mm-hmm. A lot of work, very, very painful process. Lots of downtime usually happens. And, you know, bringing in technologies like the new Windows Server really makes a lot of that process much simpler. At least after you get on that storage spaces platform, you never have to worry about any of that, downtime again due to storage migrations.
Well, and there's a really good reason why companies like Microsoft and others that are hosting huge data centers are using cheap storage and using solutions like this rather than having a SAN, to support all that storage.
It's all about money.
Well, money and the fact that you can get the performance and reliability from the cheaper systems.
Right.
And as long as we're on the topic, let's talk about Azure, because a big part of our conversation today is going to have to do with what we can do with the cloud. So we know that Microsoft Azure is Microsoft's cloud solution, mm-hmm. that it supports many different things, not just storage, but we're going to focus on storage. So what is, in a nutshell, what is Azure Storage all about?
So Azure Storage, so first of all access to Azure Storage is done through a storage account. So whenever you sign up for Azure or open up your Azure account, you create storage accounts. And you can create multiple storage accounts on an individual company account or personal account. And within a storage account, there are many different types of data can be stored. These include blobs, tables, queues, file storage, drives, SQL data, big data, and a whole lot more. So it's not just a hard drive in the sky or anything like that. It's a far more complicated offering, and we can go a little bit deeper into some of this stuff if you like.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you, tell us a little bit more about that architecture. How's that all created? How's that all supported?
Yeah, so For a quick overview, I guess what I'd say is the Windows Azure Storage architecture has three main layers here: a front-end layer, a partition layer, and a DFS layer. And for availability, each layer has its own form of automatic load balancing and dealing with failures and recovery in order to provide high availability when accessing your data. For durability, it's the DFS layer, keeping multiple replicas of your data spread across multiple potential failure points, and it keeps your mean time between failures low. So if you look at it this way, what's really happening is you have for every block of data that's written to one disk, it's replicated to another disk, and everything that makes up that core system has redundancy built in. Not just redundancy as in, like RAID 5, but actual copies of data on many disks, actual copies of all of those disks in other places. And we can talk, we can go a little bit deeper into that if you like as well.
Yeah, I'm actually going to ask you more about that in just a minute. But, having access to the storage that's up in the cloud, of course, is going to require some security. I mean, certainly it's the company's information, the company's crown jewels, and not only in transit but at rest, we need to be able to guarantee that it's available and that the authentication to that is reliable. So in order to connect to these storage accounts, what is the kind of authentication that has to happen to make that happen securely?
Sure. So there's lots of ways to authenticate to get to data in Azure, but I'll tell you the two primary ways. One is through the Azure portal, or through Azure credentials through an API or some other mechanism to get directly into Azure. But the key way or the primary way for accessing data, accessing storage through Azure is with a public-private key. So you have a key combination where you have a computer certificate on your server that is the public key is uploaded to Windows Azure, and there's a key from Azure that's downloaded. So you have that two-way trust at the computer level. So you're not dealing with usernames and passwords every time you want to do something and stuff like that. You actually have the computers that are authenticating with each other. And I actually wrote, that process for creating computer certificates, and I know when I mentioned certificates, people kind of hold their breath a little bit. Oh my God, I got to deal with certificates to deal with Azure. That's because certificates can be really, really, really challenging component. And in fact, about a year ago, year and a half ago, I went through and created a step-by-step for people to help people go out and create these certificates. And it ended up being many pages of step-by-step instructions. And you know what? If you miss something in the middle, all bets are off and start all over. And not only that, but you end up with like all kinds of different certificates in your store and like, which one am I supposed to use? And what a headache that became. And not only that, but just people are just terrified of certificates. So I went out and I said, there's got to be a better way. So I went out, I went to my trusty friend, Mr. PowerShell, and sat down for a few days, came up with a few lines that I could copy and paste into PowerShell, and it spits out a lovely certificate that I can just upload to Windows Azure. No going into the certificate store, no going into the certificate services or anything like that. It's just copy, paste, into PowerShell, and it spits out their certificate. You can customize it a little bit if you want, because I've got some variables at the top of the script. So you can give it the name of the file that you want to create, that you know the where you want it stored and stuff like that. By default, I use like the computer name, I store it on the local C drive. Typically a place that you have available, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to be, you know, it's an administrative PowerShell prompt, and then paste, and it spits out the certificate for you. Upload that to Windows Azure, download the key from Windows Azure, you have that two-way certificate. Now, people can access that certificate, that script from aka.ms/gurucert, G-U-R-U-C-E-R-T. So literally super simple, and I've had thousands of people tell me how they've been able to use that to greatly increase the time to market to get their servers up and running in Windows Azure.
Very good. Very good. Nice starting point. And certainly to that point about certificates and the way that's managed. So that's really good. And I appreciate that resource. Thank you very much, Dan. And on behalf of everyone who's viewing is going to take advantage of that. So let's talk about the storage types that you mentioned. You mentioned them briefly, but I want to dive into just a little more detail about what they are and what they're used for. The first one you mentioned was blob storage. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So blob storage is your primary container for storing data on Windows Azure. It serves up images or documents, storing files for distributed access, streaming videos, audio, performing secure backup and disaster recovery. We can talk a little bit more about that later. Storing data for analysis by on-premises or Azure-hosted services. It's your primary storage. Basically, you have your account. Inside your account, you have containers. Think of your containers as like your folders. And then you have your blob. And your blob is going to be, you can look at it as another, as a type of container. Think of it like a zip file. So your container is like a folder, and your blob is like your cab file, your cabinet file or something. And then you have all your images or your AVI files or whatever, all your files that are stored inside that blob storage. So that's your common method for storing data in Windows Azure.
And really, it's kind of the foundation. I mean, really, it's not something you have to worry about. I want to use this blob. I mean, it's really, you're going to be creating your objects. They're going to be in this storage. And that definition of that type of large object, binary large object is what it stands for,
right.
is the kind of access that's going to need, whether it's real sequential reads and writes or whether it's random. And on the random side, let's talk about file storage, because that's another type that you mentioned, Azure file storage. What's that used for?
Yeah, common uses for file storage are migrating on-premises applications that rely on file shares to run in Azure virtual machines or cloud services. And you want to avoid the expensive rewrites. Storing shared application settings, for example, in configuration files. Storing diagnostic data for logs, metrics, crash dumps in a shared location. Storing tools and utilities needed for developing and administering Azure virtual machines or cloud services. So that, more of the high I/O, access, constantly accessed, rewrite types of environments.
Okay. All right, good. So real good summary on the types of storage. Now let's jump back to the reliability aspects. I want to make sure that data is reliable. So what kind of redundancy is really built into the architecture? You mentioned that there are multiple copies kept. So what happens then if a hard drive fails in Microsoft's data center? Of course, it's going to, because they do. What happens if we have a whole data center region go away? I mean, that's worst case, but what happens then?
Sure. So from a data standpoint, there are... Whenever a block is written in Windows Azure, it's not written to one disk, it's written to three disks. So you have this simultaneous write to multiple locations. And this is in lieu of doing something like a RAID 5 where you're striping across multiple platters. You're literally making, a triple mirror, if you will, of every block that goes down to disk. Now, there's several different types of Azure storage for redundancy. You have locally redundant, and that's what I've just described, where you have three disks in a local data center that, your data is automatically redundant based on replication, using DFS. And then you have your zone redundancy, which is, each data center is broken down into multiple zones, and each zone is separated by a firewall. So if you picture, I look at it this way, think of it like a Home Depot or a Lowe's, just this huge warehouse
by
building.
By firewall, you're not talking about networking firewall. You're actually
talking
about firewall.
actually, okay. a concrete wall, absolutely.
Okay.
So picture this giant warehouse, like 10 times the size of a Home Depot, and there's a big giant concrete wall down the middle of it. One side is one zone, the other side is another zone, and there's no fire going from one side to the other because there's nothing but concrete between the two. That's what I mean by firewall. So in a zone redundant, you'd have those copies go across the fire zone to the other one, and you'd have a replication there. And then you have geo-redundant replication, which is takes it one step further. And this is the whole data center scenario goes down. You know, data center, you know, a hurricane comes through and, you know, wipes out the whole data center or takes down the entire internet feed to the data center or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Geo-redundant storage takes those three copies that you already have in your storage, and instead of just copying them to another zone, it copies them to another data center, and that data center is greater than 400 miles away. So you have that geo-redundant. And you know what? That's automatic. You turn on a checkbox, and that geo-redundancy happens. So it's very, very, very easy. There's also something, you know, read access geo-redundant. So for read access to that geo-redundant data.
So if you need, you can pay a little bit extra, but if you need or want to have a copy that you can access that's in that other location, 400 miles or more away, that's another option we grant you, that read
sure.
access.
For cool. the read access, right.
Yeah, very good. Now, what about performance? We have all these disks, all this storage and this redundancy, but I need to make sure that things are working well and working quickly. So what can we guarantee as far as performance of our systems in Azure?
Okay, so a couple things I want to talk about here, because whenever you're talking about performance, particularly in a hybrid world, there's two different elements that you have to look at. One is the performance of the local storage, and I'll tell you the servers that they use, you know, the servers that Microsoft uses on Azure, it's not the $1,200 server that you go to Dell and buy. It's just not. You know, it's a high end infrastructure across the board, So what they've got is they've got 500 IOPS per disk, so the more disks you have, and how you're structuring your data, the more IOPS you're going to get per disk. But that's not really the big showstopper in terms of a hybrid performance area. Your big area of concern with performance is going to be actual network performance getting into and from the data center. So some targets for that is. And around trading, you know, across the storage containers and stuff. You've got total account capacity of 500 terabytes. You've got total request rates, assuming 1K object size, is up to 20,000 entities or messages per second. So that's a lot of storage. That's a lot of data. That's a lot of packages going, you know, per second. That's just an enormous amount of response. And then from an ingress, total bandwidth for geo-redundant storage account, you've got an ingress of up to 10 gigabytes per second and an egress of 20 gigabytes per second. From a total bandwidth locally, for local redundant storage, you're looking at 20 gigabytes per second and up to 30 gigabytes per second egress. Ingress is, you know, inbound being sent to the storage account, and then egress is outbound or being received from the storage account.
Okay, so this, and a lot of this performance has to do with local resources within Azure, from the server running in Azure to the local storage that it's using. So that's the performance of what you see from the resources you have there. And of course, a lot of this also going to depend upon whether you're using your application across the internet. And we'll talk about some other options we have in terms of accessing storage or even accessing resources in Azure other than just across the internet. But so. I understand that we can take snapshots of data in Azure. Tell me a little bit more about snapshots.
We have this snapshot capability to lock data for reading. So a snapshot is kind of like it is in Hyper-V, where it's a point in time image of what was there, where it doesn't take a whole copy of the data. It just, you know, kind of freezes it. Then you have read access to that frozen storage in time. This technology is primarily used for backup because you can then work with that snapshot and read data to do things like backup and stuff like that. So that's, in a nutshell, what a snapshot is.
Okay, good. Nice to have that option available to us.
Just one more thing on that. It's not designed to be your backup solution. It's designed as a way for you to get read-only access to your data so that you can back it up.
Okay. So now Azure has a web portal that we can use to get into our Azure account. That's the way we'd set up a new either trial or a new subscription. Mm-hmm. So we use a browser and connect to the portal that way. But of course, my applications and maybe other automations are going to use other ways probably to connect to Azure and my Azure resources, my Azure storage as well. What other options do I have available for that kind of connectivity?
There is lots of ways to connect to data through Azure. I mean, more than I could count on all my fingers and toes, and I don't know, probably hundreds, maybe even thousands by now. But I'll run down some of the kind of the more prominent ones. You have SMB 2.1, so the connection to Azure is not quite the 3.0 yet, but SMB 2.1 connectivity directly into your Azure account. And that's the SMB, just to remind our audience, that's your protocol for file shares. So, you know, think of it as a file share in Azure. You have URL access, because those containers, the counts, containers, blobs, you can access all of that through URLs. You have the .NET API for applications. If you want to write your own custom programs to access data directly, you can absolutely do that. PowerShell is my friend. I love PowerShell. PowerShell is a very elegant way to access data for those that are, you know, PowerShell savvy. And if you're not, hey, maybe you should start thinking about getting into it, because it's some really, really powerful stuff there. System Center, awesome utility for managing the entire hybrid infrastructure. So it has direct links and direct capabilities to work with everything that's in Azure, the entire cloud platform, your storage, your networking, everything. So all that's built into the System Center. Visual Studio, of course, is the primary tool used by developers to write programs and to leverage those API calls into Windows Azure. It has direct connects right into Windows Azure. SQL Server, we can talk more about that later, I hope, but SQL Server has direct connections right into Windows Azure. Many, many, many applications now connect directly to Windows Azure. There's a great utility, AZ Copy. I don't know if you've used this or heard of this. It's a command line utility designed for high performance uploading, downloading, and copying data to and from Microsoft Azure Blob and file storage. So think of it as like a robocopy for Azure, right? So you can just push your data up and pull it down via a command line, and then integrated Windows Server Backup. You may know Windows Server 2012 has an awesome backup utility with scheduler and everything all built into it. Mm-hmm. Well, Windows Azure, that tool with an update for Azure can communicate directly with Azure Storage and do backups right into Windows Azure. So very, very cool. Mm-hmm. There's a device called Store Simple that Microsoft bought a couple of years ago. This is a really, really cool device where you store it in your data center, and it uses Azure as a tiered storage it's a SAN, and it uses Azure as a tier for its storage. Many, 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 many more. There's literally everybody is writing, hard coding connections right into Azure, where you put in your credentials or it uses the certificate, the computer cert for authentication. Everybody's getting into the game because this, Azure storage thing is huge. I don't know how Microsoft does it, but they're selling storage for less than I can buy it for. I guess it's all about volume, right? When you buy, train loads worth of this stuff, then you can get it pretty cheap. Pretty much anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, great. And a lot of good options. And thanks for, even a lot of good, as you mentioned, third-party options as well. A lot of different tools that are out there to allow you to access directly to your storage accounts and manage those resources.
Oh, yeah. On that note, though, Kevin, there's also, I don't think I mentioned it, there's a bunch of Windows Azure Storage Explorers, some of them by Microsoft, and a lot of them are third-party. So those are also some really good resources for getting up to speed and connecting quickly without going through those individual applications. You can use Storage Explorers, which is a pretty cool way to do it as well.
Yeah. Now, you talked briefly about this thing called Store Simple. I want to get a little bit more into that because it sounds like a really great solution for an easy, it's easy, but it's complicated on the back end, but you don't have to worry about that. A nice, simple solution for local storage that is more than just local storage. So tell me a little bit more about Store Simple.
Oh, yeah, it's way, way, way more than local storage. So I guess you could look at it as a SAN device, where it's network attached. You literally plug it into your infrastructure in your data center, and it's got a bunch of spinning disks. It's got some SSD disks in it. It's got a network connection. You use that as your SAN device. Now, whenever you buy Store Simple, the device, or whenever you get the device, it comes with Windows Azure storage with the product. So it uses Windows Azure as a third tier in the storage. So you can have your spinning media, you have your SSD for your hot tier, and then for your cold data, it gets pushed up to Windows Azure. And it's all done automatically through the power of software. So, you know, it's awesome for like VM archives or file shares, network attached storage. You know, you replace network attached storage devices. You know, any types of businesses, regional office storage. You know, one of the really cool things about this too is if you have multiple offices, if one goes down, the other one can automatically, you know, grab all the stuff that was on the other one, even if it's no longer available. So there's this intelligence built into it by leveraging Windows Azure to be able to just read it right off of the Windows Azure site. You could really put anything on it that you would put on your, you know, local storage in your on-premises servers, and then have that automatically, you know, replicate out to Azure via this Store Simple device. The best part of it, though, Kevin, is that, you know, it really, because of the way that it's the way that it's priced, the way that it's the way that it's sold, it actually converts your expenses needed. You know, generally whenever you go buy a SAN, you spend tons of money up front, and you basically buy that hardware for what you think you're going to need for the next 5 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. Well, with the Store Simple device, you're switching from a capital expenditure model to an operational expenditure model, because what you're doing is you're actually using that storage. The bulk of that storage is actually Azure storage, so it's, you know, pay for it when you need it kind of thing. So the operational expense versus the capital expense is a real, real big deal to many companies.
Yeah, if you're not sure about the difference, go talk to your local bean counters. They will tell you.
For sure.
They prefer operational expense to capital. And, you know, on the subject of using Azure as a backup location, I think another thing that a lot of companies should consider is, what are you doing now, or do you have requirements for offsite storage? Because Azure becomes that off-site storage location for you. So rather than having a company come in with their truck and pick up your tapes and deliver them to some vault somewhere, and then calling them up when you have to restore something from years ago, now you've got that all sitting in the cloud. You can easily restore that as part of that archive solution.
So absolutely.
Much more efficient and less expensive.
And multiple locations, because you got to just turn on geo-redundancy, boom, you've got it in multiple locations. So super simple. Yep.
Fantastic. Now, storage is a pretty deep subject. We talked briefly about file and blob storage. But what if I'm going to save something like a SQL database? I've got this big SQL database, nice structured relational data, and I want to store that in the cloud. And I want to store it in the form that I can use in that way. Is there anything I have available to me in Microsoft Azure that will support a SQL Server database?
Tons. I love this topic because Microsoft has just totally, you know, hit it out of the park when it comes to SQL and Windows Azure. I should say Azure now, right? There's lots of different ways you can do that. There's this SQL Azure, which will allow you to run SQL as a service, where you can actually put your database in Azure. It runs on storage locally in Azure. You access that through your API calls or through your connection wizard, or however you're going to connect to it, even if it's through Excel and Power Pivot or whatever. However you want to access that, it's just because you configure the connection to connect to Azure instead of your local storage. So that's one way to do it. You can also run SQL Server, full SQL Server, inside of a virtual machine in Windows Azure, and get all of the capabilities of SQL Server. You get a lot of capabilities with SQL Azure, but there's even more capabilities with all of the broker services. Everything that you can do on premises, you can do in Windows Azure with SQL Server running in a virtual machine. But that's not the best part. The best part is the integration between the two. So you can do things like, if you have your on-premises SQL Server and you want to replicate that into Windows Azure, so you have that failover capabilities to Windows Azure, not a problem. Mm-hmm. Gets even better than that. Picture this. You know, we talked about using Azure as storage and how cheap storage is in Windows Azure. What if you're running SQL Server locally? So your master database, your tempdb, all of that, all your log files is running on your local server, but just like with Hyper-V, you can put your VHD somewhere else. What if you put your databases in Windows Azure and connect it to them directly from the SQL Server Enterprise Manager, and do and all your applications are just using that connection that's going right to Azure. That is a possibility, and it's super, super simple.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, all you have to do is detach the database files, the log files, copy those up using, you know, AZ Copy or some other cool tool, and then reattach it to your server in its new location. Awesome capabilities. Now, it gets even better than that, though, because if you don't want to do that, you can actually move it from right inside the interface. So all of this is built into the Enterprise Manager and SQL Server. So very, very, very tight, nice integration for leveraging SQL Server on Windows Azure.
And that is the goal. Make it easy, make it familiar, make it the same way we've been doing it for years between servers and our local storage, now having that same connected capability. Sounds like we nailed it, so that's really good news. Now, what are some of the other storage components we haven't talked about? Maybe just touch briefly on a few more.
Yeah, so let me just, one last thing on SQL and SQL Database is we've not even scratched the surface. Enormous offering. It's incredible capabilities from a SQL standpoint. Anybody that's running a SQL database, anybody that's running a website that has a database backend, Azure is definitely the way to go from a database standpoint. It totally rocks this world. So I would encourage everybody to get a little smarter on the SQL elements of Azure, because they totally rock. But you know, we just keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and it's like there's no end in sight, because when we talk about additional services or storage components that we haven't talked about, HD Insight, you know, drive decisions by analyzing unstructured data with Azure HD Insight. It's a big data solution powered by Apache Hadoop. Build and run Hadoop clusters in minutes. So super, super simple and fast to set up. You get this capability of doing, you know, this big data stuff with giant clusters, and you know what? You don't got to go buy a bunch of hardware for it. It just totally rocks. You have cache capabilities. Azure Cache is a family of cache offerings with fast data access and low latency. You have those needs. Backup. We touched a very, very little bit on backup. You know, the backup is so, so super simple to use. I do have a blog post on that, aka.ms/azbackup. And the AZ Backup, it uses that Guru Cert, walks you step-by-step through setting that up. Anybody that's got a Windows Server 2012 machine, they should be backing their stuff up to Windows Azure and using that backup storage. Awesome solution. Site recovery. I love site recovery. Use site recovery service to protect your data in clouds. The site recovery helps automate protection and orchestration recovery from your private clouds. So my favorite part, though, is it's in preview right now, which allows you to replicate Hyper-V to and recover in Windows Azure. So, you know how the Hyper-V replica function, it works, where if you have two Hyper-V servers, you can replicate your virtual machine from one server to the other. And then if your primary host goes down, you can fail over. Mm-hmm. That's the way site recovery works, where you're replicating from Hyper-V into Windows Azure, and then you can spin that up on the Azure side to make that to make that your primary. So some really incredible technologies built in. Now there's also machine learning. I haven't dug real deep into this, but it's a fully managed cloud service that enables data scientists and developers to efficiently embed predictive analysis into their applications. It helps organizations use massive data sets and bring all the benefits of the cloud to machine learning. So think of clusters of machine doing the data analysis. So no longer are you running processes that take 3 weeks to run. You run them on these, you know, machine learning capabilities, where you've got tons of machines that are out there doing the work really, really fast. So some pretty awesome capabilities from a machine learning standpoint.
And
there's more. This is an overview, right? We could go a lot deeper on any number of these.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the big picture is, in a nutshell, would be to say that you have the resources of a global data center really at your disposal in Microsoft Azure. So, and we touched on the storage aspects, but there's certainly many more. Dan, we're out of time. So before we close, do you have any additional recommendations for resources you want to direct our viewers to?
I think there's a couple things that we have to mention that are just super, super critical. One is, you know, particularly for IT professionals, it's so important that they get smart on cloud technologies. You know what? Cloud's not a fad. If They haven't realized that yet. I don't know what rock they've been hiding under. This is here to stay. And the reason why is it's so fundamentally changing our world. It changed our world like the internet changed our world, where everything is different. Everything is changing. And the longer it takes people to get on board, the harder it's going to be for them to catch up, because everything changes so fast. And you know, it used to be that if you waited a year or a year and a half to get on board, no big deal, because what was the cycle for change? It was 18 months to 3 years to 5 years sometimes for operating systems. Nowadays, that schedule has gone from 18 months to 5 years down to 30 days to 90 days. It's just an incredible fast changes that things are happening because of the cloud. And that's one of the reasons why the cloud has become so popular. So the way to do that, the way to get smart on Windows Azure and really set Windows Azure on a course for your career is the Microsoft Virtual Academy. So the Microsoft Virtual Academy is a free university that Microsoft offers online. Go at your own pace. It has tests. It has achievements. So you can get bragging rights once you pass tests and, get through different classes and criterias, and it's all kinds of topics. They do Azure, they also do virtualization and SQL and development, and you name it, it's probably on a university, and that's a free resource, Microsoft Virtual Academy. But beyond that, I'll say one of the things, Microsoft is not necessarily known for great documentation in their products. They're really not, right? They're known for great documentation online in the TechNet libraries, sure. And in the MSDN libraries, they got some really good documentation there. But with Windows Azure, man, they nailed it. They've got some awesome documentation built into the Windows Azure portal. So if you click on documentation in Windows Azure, you'll see tons of stuff. And it's not just, overview, this is what this feature does kind of stuff. It's step by step, click here, click here, click here to do these different things. So awesome documentation. And a lot of people use cloud services for programming, and a lot of companies are now rewriting their in-house applications to take advantage of some cloud services so that they can do things like, share with their employees very easily, leveraging mobile services, leveraging mobile applications and partner services and even customer services, leveraging cloud services. So lots of companies are doing that. And there are tons of example code bases out there that you can use. So there's so many resources available online. Start with the Windows Azure documentation. You'll be amazed at what's out there. So everybody needs to take a look for the documentation.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff out there. And, of course, now we've just added one more good resource, which is this recording. So I hope you've all appreciated being with us today. We certainly appreciate you taking your time to view this. Dan, thank you again. And we'll see you all again for another edition of TechNet Radio, modernizing your infrastructure with hybrid cloud.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.